We get things underway this afternoon by welcoming back to the program a guy who had so many great hits back in the late 1960s, songs like Lady Willpower, Woman, Woman, Over You, This Girl Is a Woman Now. He's headed out to soon on the Happy Together tour, which will come to New England for a few dates in mid-June. We are happy to be joined here on Downtown by Gary Puckett. Let's jump right in here. The Happy Together tour getting underway again soon. You don't have to go too far. First stop right there at home in Clearwater.
That's absolutely right. One of the premier venues in all of the United States. It's called Ruth Eckert Hall, and it's really, really a terrific venue. So it's a great place to begin the tour. I'd prefer, between you and me, to have a few dates behind us just so that all the quirks were worked out, but that's not the case. So anyway, all my friends and neighbors and everybody are going to be there, my family, everybody.
Well, that's wonderful. And you'll be here in New England June 11th at Hampton Beach, 13th and 14th in Hyannis and Cohasset, Massachusetts. We've talked to so many of the people who are part of that tour, who have been part of it through the years, Bob and Paul Cowsill, Ron Dante, Mickey Dolenz, Mark Volman. There seems to be just a real good sense of community among the performers.
Well, there is. You know, we've been friends for many, many years now, and, you know, we have, through hook or by crook or whatever reason, worked together, known each other, run across each other. We've all become acquaintances, and many of us have become very good friends. So having traveled many times with all of them, I consider them all very good friends.
Now, am I right that it was kind of your idea to start the tour back in the day?
Well, you know, I recall talking with the people that began the production of the Happy Together tour, and I had done a concert in, I guess it was on Long Island. It was called the Meadowlands. That was the name of the venue then. I'm sure that it's changed a couple of times since then. But it was one of those big rock and roll shows, you know, where there were lots of acts, and I recall a fellow from our agency that I've been with for many years coming to me backstage and saying, "My boss would like to talk to you." So I said, "Really?" He said, "Yes, he's in New York City. Can you make it?" And I said, "Yeah, sure. Why don't I come in tomorrow?" So we were talking, and they said, we are working with the association and with the Turtles, and we'd like to work with you too. And I thought about it, and I said, "Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Let's get busy and see what we can do." And I said, "We're talking about, just touring and things in general. I said, why don't you put us all together?" And they went, "What?" I said, "Put us all together out there." I said, the Turtles have a certain crowd. The association has a certain crowd. I've got a certain crowd. Put them all together. I think you've probably got a good crowd." So they thought it over. They said, "Yeah, we're going to do that, but we're going to add one more act, and that would be Spanky and our gang." So, yeah, I think I was somehow instrumental in putting that together, at least in the idea form.
And of course, you know who the audience is, the core audience, and yet if you go to a Happy Together tour show, you see multiple generations of people, and it's got to be great to look out and see, you know, teenagers and even younger singing along to your songs.
Oh, it's absolutely wonderful. You know, I see younger people all the time in the concerts, and even our concerts alone, you know, I find the younger folks, and I always ask them how old they are and how they know the music, and it's always wonderful to hear that they've heard it from their parents or their grandparents, and sometimes they'll say, I just don't really care for the music of my genre, so I search the airwaves, so to speak, you know, and find the music that I like, and I discovered the music of the 60s in particular, and they said, "We just love it." So it's nice. I find young people, too. There's an app out there called Cameo, and I decided to become a part of the Cameo, the Cameo personalities, you know, and people can request you to sing happy birthday to their mom, their dad, their wife, whoever, you know, or happy Mother's Day or whatever it is, a Merry Christmas. And I generally like to use my guitar and sing them a song or whatever, you know, and oftentimes those people that are requesting me are younger people, and they'll say, you know, I'm I'm just a young person, but my parents love your music. They have forever. And, I, you know, so, yes, lots of young people. And I think that's a really, really good thing. I'm proud to be a part of all the good music that we made, you know, in the late 60s.
That's wonderful. Now, are you still driving yourself to the shows on the tour?
Yes, we will be driving. I'm just not a person who can do the routine of the bus. A lot of the members of the tour like the bus, but they oftentimes leave anywhere from midnight to 4 in the morning, and they sometimes hang out at the venue all day long rather than even having a hotel. So not being one who can abide by the, the rules of the bus, you know, and it's difficult to travel on a bus when you've got 10 people and there's personalities and then somebody catches a cold and, you know, that kind of thing. So I try to stay protected from all that. Besides, it's just better for me to go back to the hotel after the show, get 6 or 7 hours sleep, get up and drive. You know, that's just a better way to go for me.
That makes perfect sense to me. We're talking with Gary Puckett here on Downtown. Oh, I want to go back to the beginning. You come from a musical family. Both your parents were singers, right?
They were singers. My mother was also a very accomplished pianist, and my dad was a saxophonist, and they met, I guess, right out of high school, and were in a band, a big band called the Dick Halverson Big Band, and, you know, played the music of their era. I think that they probably both would have liked to gone on and had a career in music, but I think they realized early on that music was not an easy career in their day, so they chose to have a more traditional sort of life. My dad went into merchandising. My mom was basically a housewife and raised five children. And you know, we were a close knit family. My mom continued to play through the years. There was always a piano in the house, and she played for church, for gatherings of all nature. And my dad would drag out the saxophone once in a while, and of course she played daily, so there was music in the house every day. And he was a singer in a barbershop quartet, in fact, in a couple of them. So, and she was in what they called the Sweet Adelines, which was the female counterpart to you know, the Barbershop Society for the Preservation of Barbershop Quartet Singing in America. Big title, but but a great organization.
Did I read, too, that your dad was a prisoner of war in World War II?
Yes, you did, probably. He was. He was reconnaissance, meaning that he was on the front lines and always looking for enemy positions in order to let our troops know where they could find the enemy. And he, at one point, was captured by the Germans and spent nearly 6 months in prison, German prison camps. And there came a point when I think my mother actually thought that he was dead, because she got the letter that he was missing in action. And, of course, being a prisoner of war, there was no way that, you know, any letters would go out. So there came a point also when the Russians were coming and the Germans all left the prison camp, and my dad and others were able to escape that particular place, and they made it back to friendly lines. And yes, he made it back home. And in fact, I wrote a song about it some years back called These Beautiful Eyes, which appears on our Live in Las Vegas album. It was actually Paul Revere who called me one day and said, you know, I'm going to do my new album for the Vietnam veterans. And I said, let me read you something. So I read him the lyric, and he says, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I'm into. So I said, let me finish the music, and I'll send it to you. And so Paul Revere's Raiders became the musicians on the track, and they recorded it. They sent me the track. I put a vocal on it, and And it's quite a beautiful song, actually. I'm very proud of it, but it honors my mom and dad, and I am the beautiful eyes in the song because they talk about, you know, how he was gone, and when he got back, she says, thank God that you gave me these beautiful eyes looking at me, who was their son. Anyway, I'm not explaining it very well, but it's a nice song.
Wow, it's a wonderful story. And now, obviously, knowing the musician's life, they wanted something different for you. They wanted you to, what, be a doctor or a dentist, a professional person?
Yeah, they did. They wanted. All parents want their kids to do better than they did. That's a normal thing. And they wanted all of their children to succeed beyond their abilities. But my dad was very successful. He worked hard all of his life to provide for his family. We were never rich, but we were kind of a middle-class family that was able to withstand the pressures, you know, of the world. They wanted me to go on to college and hopefully be in medicine or something like that. And I never made it. It was always music for me that I wanted to make happen. So I did go to higher education for a couple of years when I was in San Diego, living in San Diego. And there just came a point during those 2 years that I realized more that it was music that I wanted to do and not the higher education. So I quit school and fortunately was able to make the music thing work and made some music that remains popular to this day.
Well, that first band, The Outcasts, you had a pretty good gig going there in San Diego. And you know, for bands in those days, you stayed together for a couple of years. That's a pretty good run then.
Well, it was a good run, actually. We were a very, very good musical band. We just weren't very good personality-wise. The drummer and the bass player were always fighting about this and that and whatever. And they both always wanted to be the leader. They both always wanted to call the songs. They were both always at odds. So there just came a point where I broke from the trio that we were, which was a very good band. And we worked in a great club called the Quad Room, and we had a great following in San Diego. But I needed to move on because it just wasn't working out. And, of course, you know, I was able to find the right guys who became the core of a group that was to be called the Union Gap.
And I love the story, too, of you. I think you went into Los Angeles and knocked on a whole lot of doors and then actually got in to see producer Jerry Fuller. And am I right that he was in the process of hanging up a gold record when you walked into his office?
Yeah, he was newly hired by Columbia Records at that point. He had had some local success when he lived in Texas as a singer, songwriter, producer, and he went to Los Angeles to seek his fame and fortune and was hired by Columbia Records because he had written a song called Travelin' Man, which he had originally written for Sam Cooke, but Sam didn't want it. Ricky Nelson did, and it sold 4 million copies. So Columbia Records was impressed with that, and they said, well, we'll hire you to find talent to write songs and to produce records for Columbia Records. And it just happened that he was putting his office together at the moment that I walked into his office and had a portfolio in my hand that sort of displayed the talents of this new group that I was calling the Union Gap. So I walked in. I said, what are you doing? He says, I'm hanging up a gold record. And I said, I've never seen one of those before. Let me see it up close. And he said, right, here you go. There it is. I was very impressed. And I asked him if he'd take a look at my portfolio. And he did. And he liked what he heard and what he saw. And he came to see us in San Diego. And he decided that we were worthy of making a record. So he said, I'll come back with papers. And we will sign here in the bowling alley, sitting in this booth, when I get it all together. So that's what he did. He went back to Los Angeles, came back about 6 weeks later with recording contracts, publishing contracts, all the things that were necessary for us to make a record. And he said, here, I've got a song in my hand that I think is a hit record. So let's make this record here. And he handed me a song called Woman, Woman, Have You Got Cheating on Your Mind? It was recorded by Tom Paul and the Glaser Brothers as a country record, and it had seen no success in the national charts. So we made a pop record out of it, and don't you know that it went to the top of the charts.
And I just heard, I don't know if you've heard this, that Jimmy Payne passed away in the last couple days.
I did not hear that. No.
Yeah, I saw that online actually late last night, and was very sad to see that. He had a tremendously successful career, mostly in Nashville.
Yes. Well, I'm really sad to hear that. Oh.
I'm sorry to...
Well, thanks for the bad news.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, that session, too, for Woman, I think you guys would do with three songs in that session, and you had a friend of our show, the late, great Hal Blaine. Glenn Campbell was on guitar. Was Carol Kay there, too?
She was. She was on bass. Actually, Carrie Chater, who was our bass player, and Carol Kay sat next to each other.
Wow.
They both could read music, obviously, and they combined their bass sound and came up with whatever was apropos for our recording. And yes, there were others there. Howard Roberts, very famous guitarist, was there. Other famous in these musician circles were there. We had a 30-piece orchestra, so it was pretty phenomenal. And it's emblazoned in my memory and something I'll always have that I can just see before me.
Boy, in 1968 was just an incredible year. You sold more records than anybody, the Beatles included that year. So many great hits, Lady Willpower, Young Girl. I think my favorite of the Union Gap recordings, I think the best vocal performance was Over You. I just love that song.
Well, thank you very much. So many people tell me that is their favorite. And do you know, this is a little bullet point here that's kind of fun. Do you remember Jack Webb and Sergeant Joe Friday on Dragnet?
I sure do.
Mm. Yeah, well, that was his favorite record, his favorite song, and I was his favorite singer. And that was told to me by a fellow that was doing his biography. So I'm quite proud of that fact because I recall easily, you know, the fact that I would sit in front of the TV when I was a kid and watch Sergeant Joe Friday say, "Just the facts, ma'am, just the facts."
You got to do a lot of television, all the big variety shows of the era, of the Ed Sullivan Show, a couple times. And that was a little different from some of the others because you had to actually sing live, right? No lip syncing?
Well, they would have allowed me to lip sync, but I wanted to sing live and they wanted me to sing live. So it was kind of frightening. But yeah, I did it three times and it was really a great, great experience. One of those times I recall that my manager, Peter Rachtman at the time, was there with his girlfriend, Karen Black, the famous actress. Mm. And she was just a bizarre, fun friend who came and attended the show with me. And it was just fun to be there with them and to see it all transpire and meet Ed and, you know, just everything that went on. It was a fun, fun day. But like I say, very scary because they said, you know, there's only 8 million people watching this show, so don't be scared.
you had a great string of hits, but you didn't want to record. You were not a fan of the song that Jerry Fuller brought to you, Don't Give In to Him.
Well, I wasn't a fan of the song at the time, but it turned out to be one of my favorites just because of its musical structure, the chordal forms and shapes and things. And I thought in those days that I had some sort of, that maybe I was knowledgeable about hit recordings and things like that. I should have just said, "Dare, shut up and sing and let them do their thing," you know, but... No, I wasn't a fan of the song then, but I love the song now, and it certainly has done pretty well. I wanted to clarify the fact that we did sell more recordings than anybody, including the Beatles, but that was single recordings, not albums.
Right.
I'm certain that the Beatles outsold us in albums.
You went on to have success with producer Dick Glasser, too, with another top 10 hit with This Girl Is a Woman Now.
That's correct. And what a great song that is. Still one of my favorites and one of the more difficult ones to sing.
Oh, yeah. And you released some solo records and you did not have the chart success, but I thought some great recordings. I love your cover of the old Dusty Springfield hit, "I Just Don't Know What to Do with Myself."
Well, thank you very much. I think it's a wonderful song as well. In fact, we're just about to put together "I Just Don't Know What to Do with Myself," along with "A House Is Not a Home," to contribute to Mr. Bacharach, because he just was such an incredibly talented and great writer.
And yeah, you've talked about this before. As the 60s became the 70s, people's tastes seemed to change almost overnight. And there were so many individuals, so many groups that it had success. But when the 70s rolled around, people wanted to hear something new. And it was tough to get that chart action back again.
Yeah, it was. You kind of said it all right there. You know, everything was changing. The way that recordings, technology was changing. They were trying to wind down the Vietnam War, and people were concerned socially as well. And just the drug of the day had changed, and the music was changing, getting into disco, getting into glitter rock and all that kind of thing. And, you know, the public can be a little fickle at times, but fortunately for me and many others of my era, they came back to me and said, "Hey, we miss you."
Well, you had the rise of classic rock stations, but we've had a number of performers talk with us about how important CDs were when companies began to reissue some of the albums that had only been available on vinyl, and all of a sudden a new generation discovered that music of the 60s.
Yep, really true. I'm very fortunate too, because we had such a big year in 1968 that one of the first albums that Columbia Records released on CD was Gary Puckett and the Union Gap's Greatest Hits, and it continues to be a great seller to this day. So there's a couple of different packages: the Super Hits, the Greatest Hits, and other combo kind of things. But fortunately, like I said, you know, those CDs did well for us, and it was good to see in the early '80s how the radio stations started to proliferate throughout the U.S. and become the classic rock stations. And that's exactly why the very first Happy Together tour, which was the Turtles, the Association, Gary Puckett and the Union Gap, and Spanky and our gang, became successful with the Happy Together tour. We toured 8 months of that year because of you guys playing the music and saying, "Hey, we love you. We've missed you. We're bringing you back." So thank you, everybody.
And what do you do, Gary, to keep that voice in such great shape? You sound every bit as good as you did 50 years ago.
Well, I'll just say God is good, and it was a gift from Him, and I do my best to stay in good health. And I have to stay hydrated. That's very, very important. I try to get some exercise, and as of late, I've been a little bit sluggish on the exercise. Life gets very busy as you have 2 daughters and 4 grandkids, and the family is growing and all that. But good nutrition, drinking lots and lots of water, and you know, a good belief in the higher powers, which is God Himself.
And you had a little bout, as so many did, with COVID, but apparently it didn't treat you too badly.
Well, you know, no, it didn't treat me too badly, because I'm in pretty good health.
Yeah.
So, I had the typical rash that I guess COVID can give you on your back, and it was annoying. I had the night sweats, and that was very annoying, because I'd wake up in the middle of the night sweating, and I'd have to get up and dry off and, you know, change shirts and that kind of stuff. But after about 3 weeks of no energy and not really feeling like eating and things like that, eventually it left me, and I've been fine ever since. Of course, we've continued to do the right thing, have our shots and get our boosters and that kind of stuff. So, and our daughter, our older daughter, is a pediatrician, so she's a medical doctor, and she was fighting for the shots and, you know, protecting ourselves against future And she immediately made sure that her children had the shots and the boosters and things. So we're all protected, and we're doing good.
Well, we're glad to hear that. Looking forward to the tour. The Happy Together Tour kicks off May 31st in Clearwater here in New England, June 11th at Hampton Beach, the 13th and 14th in Massachusetts at Hyannis and Cohasset. If you get a chance to see Gary and everybody else on the tour, you're going to love it. Gary, it's great to talk with you. We appreciate you making some time for us today.
It is totally my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on the airwaves with you, and I'm looking forward to the 13th and the 14th of June for sure.